It's no doubt that playing like Jerry Garcia is pretty darn amazing, but thinking like Jerry Garcia, that's a whole nother level of mind-blowing, and that's exactly what I'm going to discuss in today's Acoustic Tuesday show. I want you to play your own way, but I want you to think and use Jerry Garcia's musical philosophies. Hey TAC family, welcome to episode number 175 of the Acoustic Tuesday show. This show is designed to bring fun, focus, and progress to your guitar journey through my weekly Guitar Geek lists, plus success stories from your fellow guitar geeks. In fact, this week you're going to be learning about TAC member Jean E., who's literally been all around the world and living her best acoustic life. You'll get some inspiration from Jean here in a moment, plus you're going to get some acoustic news you can use, which includes some metalhead birds, a wonderful interview series that was just started by Tom Sands, and a couple of albums that you absolutely need to know about if you want to hear acoustic instruments recorded in the best possible way. But first, let's go ahead and get some music philosophy lessons from Jerry Garcia. As I mentioned in the intro, it's one thing to play like Jerry, but it's another thing to think like Jerry, because that allows you to approach music in your own unique way, but take some of those valuable lessons from a musician who literally, I think, operated on a completely different plane, in one way or another. So let's go ahead and dig into some lessons from Jerry Garcia. And the first lesson I want to share with you is that music takes you places. In fact, this actually relates to Gene's acoustic life story that we'll get to here in a moment, but Jerry Garcia, in an interview, when asked about looking back on his music career, had this to say.
A large part of my life I've spent doing something which has turned out to be more fun than I thought it was going to be, and it's lasted way longer than I imagined it might, and it's taken me places that I would never have ever imagined, you know. So it's, I mean, it's hard to separate myself from, you know what I mean, from the experience. I mean, after all, it is my life, you know.
In essence, Jerry is saying music is you and you are music, and it can take you places that you never thought that you'd go. And did you hear him mention fun? In fact, in preparation for today's episode, I watched a ton of different Jerry Garcia interviews, and in nearly every single one, he mentions fun and playing with friends. In fact, when asked about starting the Grateful Dead, he said, well, it was just a bunch of friends playing music together and having fun. So I think there's a lot to that, and it's really cool to hear that such an incredible band had such humble beginnings. Let's go ahead and move on to lesson number two, and this is actually from an outside observer, not Jerry himself. I want to get this name correct. Branford Marsalis played a couple of shows with Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead. Now, he's a jazz musician, and he had this to say about Jerry's improvisation skills.
And Jerry actually experimented more without being too overly technical. There were times when he would play a lot of chromatic things and things that he thought really worked against the grain. Mm-hmm. He was a marvelously gifted melody maker. He was a great soloist, and his solos were very musical, particularly on the slower things. It was a joy to play with him, and it was actually more of a joy to listen to him.
Yes, lesson number two is don't let technique get in your way. I love how Branford said that, you know, Jerry was an amazing improviser, and clearly he had a lot of musical thoughts to express, but he never let technique and his brain essentially get in the way. Now, that may have very well been from outside substances, but I think that's something that we can all apply to our own guitar journey. So often we get wrapped up in the academia aspect of playing guitar and the thought process. Just play guitar and see what happens, and learn to express your musical ideas from your whole being, not just your brain. Okay, let's move on to lesson number three. And lesson number three is don't set limits, break limits. In fact, when asked about musical development, here's what Jerry said in an interview.
My feelings about that are that there is a convention in what you could broadly describe as entertainment, mm-hmm. that states essentially once you have your act down, once you have it together, keep on doing it. That's what the people want. You know, they're coming back to see Judy Garland for the umpty billionth time, and you know, whatever. You know, they're there to see you do your little dance, and I feel that that's a serious limit on anybody who, you know, feels that they're an artist, you know, rather than an entertainer. Not to say that being an entertainer is no good, but
yeah.
But I would rather think that I'm involved in something that's more open-ended than that. You know, I'd rather not be able to see the end that clearly.
Right.
It's so refreshing to hear a guitarist of Jerry's caliber say that they don't phone it in. They want to continue pushing boundaries because that makes the band better, that makes him better, and that makes the whole entire experience better. And speaking of music as an experience, that brings us to lesson number 4, and that is music as meditation. And I find this interesting because we did an episode about Eric Clapton some months ago, and that was one of the Claptons gleaned from That was one of the lessons gleaned from one of Clapton's interviews, was that he treats music as meditation. And I find it pretty awesome that it popped up in a Jerry Garcia interview as well. Here's what he had to say about it.
You've also thought of, described music as your yoga, as your meditation.
Right, and by that I just mean that I think that it's a good thing to have some one thing that you can work on a more or less a daily basis and be able to see improvement in your own terms that is a result only of your own energy being put into the thing, you know what I mean?
I promise I'll put the words in the right order from here on out. Actually, I can't promise that whatsoever, but I promise that I'll try to get the words in the right order from here on out. Let's move on to lesson number 5, and that is patience. When writing a song, when developing a song, have patience and take in the long view of music, meaning don't give up on an idea. Kind of feel it out, and your first stab at it might not be awesome, and it might not be the final product, but hang with that idea, hang with that idea, and let it play out, sometimes over months or even years, as Jerry says in this interview.
A lot of times our first flash about the way a song should be in terms of arrangement or the rhythm or any of those possibilities, any of the substance of what makes a, you know, a piece of music. Sometimes we make the wrong decision at first, and we don't stumble onto the right sort of approach or to a song until maybe much later. You know, it does happen.
Lesson number 6 is fan appreciation. In nearly every single interview that I watched in preparation for today's show, Jerry mentions the fans. Now, we all know, and if you don't know, that's okay, but the Grateful Dead, the kind of aura that surrounds the Grateful Dead, and being a fan of the Grateful Dead, there's a lot of taping of the shows. And I found this interview with Bob Weir and Jerry Garcia on the David Letterman show where they share their philosophy about taping shows and why they let their fans do it.
And as a matter of fact, you don't mind people taping your music in concerts?
Not particularly.
Now, why? That seems to be defeating the idea of selling records.
Well, if we ever make a real good record, then probably they'll rush out and buy that anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, and besides, the tapes bring back memories to them and all that kind of stuff.
And the shows are never the same ever.
Yeah.
I mean, not even ever, you know what I mean? And
sometimes they're remotely the same.
and when we're done with it, they can have it, you know.
Uh-huh. And if that wasn't enough, I found another interview in which Jerry explains in one sentence the philosophy behind how important fans truly are.
They're the ones who keep this happening as much as we are, you know what I mean? They've invented us just like we've invented them in a way. I mean, you know, there's a mutual thing happening there. I mean, but that's true with every band, really. It's just whether or not the band chooses to deal with it or not. Really, you don't exist without your audience. It's that simple.
Okay, that was clearly more than one sentence, but the gist of the philosophy was expressed in one singular sentence. You are nothing without your audience. Which I think is pretty profound, especially coming from a guitar player who's playing to stadiums. And I think at certain points in a career that spans that much time, that influences that many people, it could potentially be easy to lose touch with that. I don't think Jerry ever did. Which brings us to the final lesson. And this is, I think, one of the most profound lessons. And I see this same idea come up in a lot of interviews with many different musicians, but I think Jerry expresses it pretty well here. Lesson number 7 is always be a student. Here's what Jerry had to say.
Well, I'm somebody who plays music, or tries to, and I think of myself as a person who's a music student. Mm-hmm. And what turns me on is being able to play and being able to continue developing. I think, you know, that's it fairly simply. And then there's concentric circles of, you know, greater and lesser turn-ons.
You know, as I was outlining today's episode, I found it incredibly difficult to limit the lessons learned from Jerry Garcia to just 7, because every single interview I watched, I was hanging on every word. Jerry's extremely articulate, he's very well-spoken, and you could tell a lot of thought goes behind his answers. So yes, these are seven lessons that I thought were incredibly important that I wanted to share with you, but I have to recommend watching any of the many interviews with Jerry that are out there, because he really has a helicopter view of music as a whole and music as an experience. Not to mention him being essentially a cultural icon and a pretty darn amazing guitar player at that. Now, that being said, I do have a question that I wanted to ask you, and I took a note on it here. I have actually two questions. In the comments below, let me know your favorite Jerry Garcia quote, or let me know your favorite Grateful Dead song. Now, I don't want you to just include a song off of an album. I want you to include the song and the live performance that you think is your favorite. I'd love for this episode to serve as a list of awesome Grateful Dead / Jerry Garcia moments. All right, let's shift our focus to the Tony's Acoustic Challenge family, and we have a TAC member that is celebrating her fifth year at Tony's Acoustic Challenge. And remember way back at the beginning of the lessons from Jerry Garcia when I said, lesson number one is music can take you places? I'm pretty sure that was lesson number one. Let me just double check. Yeah, lesson number one from Jerry Garcia was music can take you places. Well, Gene's five-year TAC-iversary shows just how many places music can take you. Let's first look at Gene's reflection on her guitar journey thus far, and then after that, let's see where music has taken her. Here's what Gene had to say during her five-year TAC-iversary reflection. I joined TAC on February 12th, 2016, so I'm a couple days early, but here goes. Number one, where were you with guitar when you joined? I started playing guitar when I was 8 and played in our church's folk group, but hadn't progressed or played much after high school. I said I had 1 year of practice about 40 times. Number two, what are three things you can do now that you couldn't do before TAC? Number one, figure out the key to a song by ear. Number two, pull-offs and hammer-ons. And number three, scales. Oh, and a bonus, group jams. Number three, complete this statement. It would be amazing if this time next year I can use a looper. That one has been a goal for a while. I simply just need to do it. Here are some highlights from my TAC journey over the past 5 years. Number one, met Tony P in person at a small venue concert in August 2016 and got to hang out. Number two, I won the monthly guitar party, a Taylor GS Mini in February 2017 and got to meet Tony and Levi in Bozeman to pick it up. Number three, ran into a fellow TAC member at the evening with Chris Martin at the Martin Guitar Factory in June 2017. Next up, in January 2018, my guitarsonal made it on episode 12 of the Acoustic Tuesday show. It's changed quite a bit since then. In February 2018, I took a trip to Antarctica and brought my close travel guitar. In June of 2018, I attended my first Acoustic Life Festival and met a whole bunch of TAC members. In March of 2019, I took a trip to Rwanda, Africa to build a suspension bridge with Bridges to Prosperity and brought along my trusty close to play for the village. And since 2020, I've been doing the Mile High Jam Club virtual open mics and the Friday Night Live virtual open mics and have been having a blast with the whole crew, meeting so many fantastic people. The guitar journey continues. And in closing, Gene says this, keep learning a little bit each day, and over time, you'll be surprised how much better of a musician you have become. What an awesome story, and what a great tie-in to today's episode in kind of that whole vein of music can truly take you places. Sometimes it's meeting awesome people by playing virtually in an open mic. Sometimes it can take you to Africa, and you can meet people that you otherwise never would have met before. So cheers to you, Gene. Cheers on your five-year TAC-iversary, and thank you so much for sharing your story. Now I'm going to head down to Texas. Well, we're going to head down to Texas, not just me. I promise I won't leave you behind. I want to look at a fellow Acoustic Tuesday family member's guitarsonal. This is Michael Crouch from Sugarland, Texas. And in his guitarsonal, he's got quite a bit of guitars. First up, we have a Martin OMC-18 Lawrence Juber, a Zager ZAD-900CE, a Gibson J45, a Siegel Artist, a Fender Newporter, a Martin Rhodes Series, a Fender Telecaster, a Martin X Series, a Martin 12-string, a Taylor GS Mini E, an Artin Luthery, a Martin Woodstock, a Fender Stratocaster, a Gretsch Electric, and we're going back in, Ibanez Baritone, Alvarez Parlor Guitar, Kola U-Bass, a Gretsch Resonator, Epiphone Dove, Little Martin No. 1, Epiphone Hummingbird, Little Martin No. 2, Yamaha FG335, Harley Benton 12-string, Epiphone Les Paul, Squire Stratocaster, Ibanez Electric, and a Rogue Lap Steel. Whew, let me just, I got to take a moment. I had to put my auctioneer hat on for a moment because Michael has so many guitars that I had to just I had to take a breather in between that. Holy smokes. But if you're sitting there thinking, wow, Michael, that's a stellar guitar arsenal, I want to join the ranks of folks sharing guitar arsenals on the Acoustic Tuesday show, I am inviting you right now to do so. All you have to do is follow three simple steps. Number one, go to acoustictuesday.store, pick out your favorite guitar arsenal shirt. Number two, when that shirt arrives, put it on and take a picture amongst all of your guitars, just like Michael did and just like Gene did, as you saw just a bit ago. And then lastly, step number three, visit acousticlife.tv, click the submit link in the top menu, and you can upload your guitar arsenal picture and tell a story and tell us what's in it, just like Michael and, of course, Gene did. Okay, let's head on back to episode number 173 of the show, where we talked about Nick Drake's tone. What an awesome episode. I was delighted at the response to that episode. So many incredible comments. Nick Drake stories, talking about which guitars Nick Drake used. I thought the overall conversation generated from that episode was enriching. It was fun to participate in. And I just want to say, first and foremost, thank you everyone who left a comment on that show. I want to highlight just a few here. This first one comes from John Spear, and he says this. Tony, Acoustic Tuesday has become part of my weekly ritual. Thank you. I always pick up a few tips and pointers, discover artists, and just enjoy the show. Thank you this week for reminding me about Nick Drake. Definitely going to dive into his music and sound more in depth. Well, John, thanks for watching. Thank you for your comment. And it sounds like, John, you weren't the only one who's kind of rediscovering Nick Drake through that episode, myself included. When we were talking about episodes that we wanted to do for the Acoustic Tuesday show, Nick Drake came up, and I thought to myself, I haven't listened to Nick Drake since I was probably in my early 20s. And here I am in my later 30s. Wow, I feel kind of old. and it was, I hadn't listened to Nick Drake in such a long time. So the episode was a refresher for me, and it sounds like for John and a bunch of other folks as well. Let's move on to the next comment here. This is from Mono Lake 02. I found Nick Drake when Pink Moon, the song, was used in a Volkswagen commercial. I heard it once and started my internet research. I have been a fan ever since. I've started learning guitar recently, and someday I hope to play Rode. I think that's an awesome goal, and it's so cool to hear all the different ways that folks discovered Nick Drake. In fact, this wasn't the only reference to that Volkswagen commercial. There was quite a few in the comments on that episode. So, you know, it just goes to show, however you find an artist, it's okay. As long as you discover them, that's the main point. Whether it's a commercial, renting. Do people rent records from libraries still? I used to do that, but I don't know if people do that still. Let me know in the comments if that's something that's still in vogue or if that's something that's gone by the wayside. Like I said, I kind of feel old. Anyways, it doesn't matter how you discover an artist. The main point is you discover them and you enjoy their music. Next comment comes from Mike Sweeney, longtime Nick Drake fan here. I can remember the first time I heard his music and where I was located and what I was doing. My favorite Nick Drake song is Northern Sky. So good. And I love this comment. I selected it because I feel like Nick Drake is one of those artists that he has such an impact. His music has such an impact that you do recall the exact moment, what you were doing, and the exact song that you heard, just like Mike expressed in his comment. And let's go ahead and visit a couple more. This one comes from Ryan Sutter. He says this, I've listened to Rode a million times from the album. At first, when I heard you play the Martin Singolo, I was sure that was gonna be the one. But the moment you started playing the Santa Cruz, I immediately felt as though that tone, whatever that was causing it, was closer to his album version. And this is in response to the question that I posed during that episode. I played a 1958 Martin Singolo 18. I played the song Rode on it, and I played a Santa Cruz Vintage Southerner. Again, played the same song, Rode, on that. And I asked, which one sounds more Nick Drake-ish? And it sounds like Ryan thought the Santa Cruz was a little bit more on the Nick Drake tonal end of the spectrum, the Nick Drake tone end of the spectrum. You know what I mean. And it was actually, it was kind of a toss-up in the comments. A lot of votes for the Santa Cruz Vintage Southerner, a lot of votes for the Singolo, and I thought it was just an interesting question to pose. I certainly had fun experimenting with it, but it's tough to gauge from the player's side. And I agree with Ryan, because after hearing the playback on the Santa Cruz Vintage Southerner, I thought personally that was a little bit more Nick Drake-ish. Let's go ahead and visit one more comment. And this one, I really dig because it's very guitar geeky, it's very Nick Drake geeky, and it contains quite a few factoids and a cool story. This comment comes from Standby2712, and here's what they have to say. A couple of things, Tony. First, read the Brighter Later cover photo with the Guild M20. There are plenty of contemporaneous witness accounts that it was just there for the photo shoot and not used on the album. However, I saw him play an all-nighter supporting John Martin at Les Cousins, I think that's how you say it, London Club, a couple of months before that album was released. He was playing Guild M20. I was into guitars even way back then. He did say that it was borrowed and that he'd have to give it back soon. So even though he didn't own it, he did play it for a substantial period. Just a little piece of guitar history trivia. Secondly, for an extraordinary insight into the origin of his unique style of writing and vocal phrasing, check out, if you haven't already, the songs of Molly Drake, his mum. The experience is really quite eerily uncanny. See what you think. Regards. Huge thanks for this comment. Number one, it's so cool to get into the myth and the lore of that Guild M20 and to hear that he may very well have played it on stage and he may very well have played it for a lengthy period of time. I can't thank you enough for leaving that comment and to be there to see him play. How cool is that? I mean, that is just so cool. Not to mention the added little factoid, I didn't even know his mom, Molly, had music out. And it's got to be cool to dig in and hear the origin of where Nick Drake got his vocal phrasing and his unique approach to music. So very cool. Everybody, thank you so much for your comments. You really do make the Acoustic Tuesday show come to life, and I greatly, greatly appreciate it. On to the final segment of the Acoustic Tuesday show, and that is indeed acoustic news you can use. Yes, it's my job to keep you on the forefront of all cool things guitar-related out in the industry, in the world, or at least things that I come across. And this first one is something that I see all the time when I'm scrolling through Instagram, and I thought to myself, you know what? It's time. I have to share it with the Acoustic Tuesday viewing audience because it's too cool not to. If you're on Instagram, well, first follow tac.guitar, tac.guitar. You'll be able to see what I'm practicing. You'll be able to see some goof ups, some insight into my day-to-day acoustic life, whether I'm headed to the hockey rink or just in my guitar den practicing. Please go ahead and follow us on Instagram. Again, that's tac.guitar. But I also want you to follow this next channel. Is that what it is on Instagram? I don't know. I'm kind of new to the Instagram game. Account. I want you to follow this account on Instagram, Dust to Digital. Mind-blowing stuff, from old work songs to old blues musician interviews to world music to these crazy videos of people playing homemade instruments in foreign lands. And yes, I've got one to share with you right now. This is Gaspar Nali playing a homemade instrument called a Baba Tony. I hope I said all of that right, from his name to the name of the instrument, but you'll be floored when you hear this. It's so darn cool. Here it is. So again, be sure to follow Dust to Digital on Instagram. You will not regret it. Every time they come across my feed, I'm like, here's something new that I never would have seen before if it wasn't for this channel or account. You get the idea. Let's move on to the next news item. And this is another delivery from Tom Sands. Yes, Tom Sands has been on a hot streak lately. Ladies and gentlemen, he has put out an incredible Tonewood series. He has the Introducing series where he shows off guitars that he made, tells the story behind them, and holy smokes, it's so cool to kind of crawl into a luthier's brain. And speaking of crawling into a luthier's brain, why not, if you're crawling into one brain, why not crawl into three? Okay, so Tom Sands just started this series called, well, this is an older series that he revamped, Luthiers WTF, where he interviews fellow luthiers. And here's an insight into the most recent episode that he just posted. I think you'll find it incredible. I'll go ahead and let Tom Sands cue it up, and we'll also take a sneak peek into what they discussed a little bit later in the interview, so you can see how many guitars these small bench luthiers are actually making per year.
What you're about to hear is a conversation between myself and three luthiers I respect and admire immensely: John Michaud, Mike Kennedy, and Dion James, all based in Canada and all producing some of the finest acoustic guitars in the world today. I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, I've struggled with knowing how many guitars I should be trying to make a year, you know, because at least for me, I got to a point where I was building them faster and faster and faster. And then about maybe 4 years ago, I hit that plateau, and now I actually almost build them slower. I take a more methodical, slower approach to a lot of the parts. At least the voicing part, whenever the box is open. If it's purely woodworking, I tend to be pretty quick at it. But if I'm analyzing and moving things around, that's when I tend to take a lot longer than I used to. Yeah, out of curiosity, about how many do you guys build a year?
So I think I managed 9 last year, which is I think is a record for me.
Yeah, I mean, changes every year depending on what I've got going on, but like 6, somewhere around there.
Yeah, if I build 8, that's my best year yet. But since Yarrow came into the world, I've been spending more time at home, so I think I built 6 last year.
I felt like my brain might have clicked out during that last introduction of the Tom Sands series, so hopefully you got all that. Bottom line, check out Tom Sands on YouTube. He's putting out a wealth of information for us guitar geeks, and we just simply have to absorb it. Subscribe to his channel. However you do the YouTube thing, just make sure his channel is on your radar. The next piece of news I have for you isn't really... it is newsworthy because we're guitar geeks. This is a stunning guitar that I just came across at Eddie's Guitars. It is all walnut. It's from the Santa Cruz Guitar Company. And what is happening with this walnut? It's like flamed walnut. It's a gorgeous guitar. And like I said, that's the only thing I got for you. It's guitar geek news, and you need to see it. I never knew that walnut could get that crazy. It apparently does, and it looks gorgeous, and it's a guitar that I want. What else is new, right? Every time I see a picture of a different guitar, it's like, oh yeah, I want that. I want that one too. My wish list is pretty long, and I keep dropping hints to Whitney, and she just simply, you know, rolls her eyes pretty wildly. I've never seen an eye roll so large. She does a good job. She does a good job of keeping me in my place and making sure that I know that she knows I'm crazy. Simple as that. That might be the story of every guitar geek marriage. Moving on to our next piece of news. This one comes from Norm's Rare Guitars. And this is a series that I don't know if it's going to be an ongoing series. I don't know if it's something that I found that is kind of in the middle of the series. But he's essentially doing episodes, or has done episodes, of touring his warehouse, where he cracks open storage containers and pulls out some mind-blowing guitars. Now, no, it's not all acoustic, but anybody that appreciates vintage guitars needs to know about this series. So let's take a quick sneak peek.
This is a gold. It's gold. It almost looks like it could be a faded burgundy mist, but I think it's gold, like harvest gold.
Mm-hmm.
Jaguar.
Ooh.
Oh wow! Look,
and
oh,
I know where I got this. This
shiny
guitar I sold years ago, and I was able to just trade to get this one back. This guitar, it's signed by Bobby Rydell. And this guitar I got originally years ago when I first bought it from Frankie Avalon's son, Tony. There's a picture of Tony with the guitar.
Wow.
And our last news item of the day is what I think quite possibly the most important news item of the day. If you're not familiar with Mandolin Orange, that's your first thing you have to do right now, is look them up on Spotify, go to your local record store, get music by Mandolin Orange. Incredible. incredible harmonies, incredible instrumentation. And I have to say, the recorded quality of their music is amongst the best I've ever heard. They have a way, whatever studio they go to, however they approach recording, they capture the magic of acoustic instruments. Well, that brings me to the actual news item. Andrew Marlin of Mandolin Orange just released not one, but two new instrumental albums. Yes, indeed, I want to get these titles right. One is entitled Witching Hour, and the second is entitled Fable and Fire. In fact, one of the selections was a piece that he wrote for his daughter. It's a song entitled Woodland Star, and that's off the Witching Hour album. And I have to say, you know, I mentioned before about recording acoustic instruments and how incredible they are at it. These two albums up at like 27 billion notches. Listening to these albums, it's the purest acoustic tone I may have ever heard on record. I've always used Tony Rice's Church Street Blues as kind of the bar for me for acoustic instruments. Hearing the sound, the true sound of an acoustic instrument, these two albums, in my opinion, surpass that tone, surpass that magic of the moment. So I cannot encourage you enough to check out these albums. I cannot encourage you enough to please order these albums. And if you want to order these albums, please do so on Andrew's Bandcamp page. The URL for that is andrewmarlin.bandcamp.com. Please check that out, and you'll be delighted. You'll be absolutely delighted when you hear those albums. Your ears will be just snacking on sonic goodness. And I think, you might even need to take a rest after you listen to those albums. It's that much of an amazing experience. And on that note, I would like to wrap up the Acoustic Tuesday show today. But before we officially end things, what am I going to be talking about next week on the Acoustic Tuesday show? Well, next week on the Acoustic Tuesday show, it's all about leveraging behavior science to facilitate progress in your guitar journey. Yeah, we're going to get a little geeky. We're going to put on our spectacles, our glasses. We're going to grab a clipboard and get a little scientific and see how that can actually impact our guitar journey in a positive way. That's all happening next week on the Acoustic Tuesday show. Remember, you can catch Acoustic Tuesday every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on YouTube. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for drinking a coffee with me, if you chose to do that. If you chose to drink water, thanks for drinking that with me as well. Also, thank you for being a guitar geek. And remember, your guitar progress, your guitar success, however you define it, is directly related to your guitar routine. So please invest the time in your guitar routine and make sure to have fun every single day you play. Again, thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next Tuesday on the Acoustic Tuesday show. Cheers to you, and Guitar Geeks Unite.